Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yasoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Randa Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnu Pai Paramahamsa Parivraja Kajarya Ashutra Shatashi Shri Maharaj Divine Grace Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Shrima Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Bhakta Brinda Ki Nitayango Brahmanandi. All glories to the Seven Devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Aparata sakalaisha namalatmani. Aviritam edita bhavano pahatu. Nija jana vashagatvam atmano yam. Na sarati chidravad akshara sutam hi. Na sarati chidravad akshara sutam. It's a different meter. Sakalesha nat malatmani viratamiditam bhavana bhavatu. Nijajanavasha katvam atmanavaya. Mothers, Aparita, vanquished, Sakala, all, Irshana, desires, Amala, spotless, Atmani, to the mind, Aviratam, constantly, Edita, increasing, Bhavana, with feeling, Upahuta, being called, Ninjajana, of his devotees, Vasha, under the control, Gatvam, going, Atmana, his, Ayan, knowing, Na, never, Sariti, goes away, Chindravat, like the sky, Akshara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Satam, of the devotees, he certainly. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation: being completely cleansed of all material desires, the devotees are free from all mental contamination. Thus, they can always think of the Lord constantly and address Him very feelingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing Himself to be controlled by His devotees, does not leave them for a second, just as the sky overhead never becomes invisible. Purport: it is clear from the previous verse that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, is very quickly satisfied by the activities of His devotees. The pure devotee is always absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated, Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna. By always thinking of Krishna, the pure devotee's heart is free from all kinds of desires. In the material world, the heart of the living entity is filled with material desires. When the living entity is cleansed, he does not think of anything material. As the mind is completely cleansed, one attains the perfectional stage of mystic yoga, for then the yogi always sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart. As soon as the Lord is seated within the heart of the devotee cannot be contaminated by the material modes of nature. As long as one is under the control of the material modes, he desires so many things and makes so many plans for material sense enjoyment. But as soon as the Lord is perceived in the heart, all material desires vanish. When the mind is completely free from material desire, the devotee can think of the Lord constantly. In this way, he becomes completely dependent upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, Ayinanda tanujan kinkaram patitam mam vishme bhavan budau kripaya tavapada pankaja stita dhuli sadrisham vinchintaya. Quote, my dear Lord, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I have fallen into the ocean of this material world. Kindly pick me up and fix me as a speck of dust at your lotus feet. Shishashaka 5. Similarly, Srila Narottam Das Thakur prays, Aha Prabhu Nanda Sutta, Rishabhanu Sutta Yuta, Karuna Karaha Ebhar, Narottama Dasakai, Na Teliha Rangapai, Toma Vina Ke Ache Amar. Quote, my dear Lord, you are now present with the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, Srimati Radharani. Now both of you, please be merciful upon me. Don't kick me away, because I have no shelter other than you. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes dependent on his devotee. The Lord is invincible, yet he is conquered by his pure devotee. He enjoys being dependent on his devotee, just as Krishna enjoyed being dependent on the mercy of Mother Yashoda. Thinking himself dependent on the devotee gives the Supreme Lord great enjoyment. Sometimes a king may engage a joker, and in the process of joking, the king is sometimes insulted. The king, however, enjoys these activities. Everyone worships the Supreme Lord with great reverence. Therefore, the Lord sometimes wants to enjoy the chastisement of his devotees. In this way, the relationship eternally existing between the Lord and his devotees is fixed, just like the sky overhead. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Agyanj Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadahar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So from what I'm able to perceive and the sequence of verses, this verse and I think the next two verses is describing the attainment of the goal of life, pure Krishna consciousness, pure love of God. So we had heard previously to this, maybe you can say detailed, intricate discussion on the principles of Sambandha Gyan, where Narada Muni was emphasizing the sameness and difference of everything that exists with himself. You know, a technical section which most people were kind of like probably sleeping through. And then the whole purpose of his discussion on that aspect of the Sambandha Gyan was to make the simple point, do devotional service. You know, worship Krishna directly. Don't worship someone else, or don't worship the Lord indirectly. Worship the Lord directly. And then he gave one verse, I think, describing some of the aspects of a devotee's worship. And then the discussion on the achievement of the goal of life. So I was able to appreciate the point that most of Narada Muni's discussion was on the principles of Sambandha Gyan. And then a little point was made about due devotional service. And then some little point will be made about the attainment of the goal of life. That particular point is interesting to consider because in order for there to be the real application of devotional service, which will actually get us the actual goal of life, then there needs to be the proper understanding of the principles of Krishna consciousness. When one does, the application of Krishna consciousness is called abhideya, and then the goal of life is called prayojan. Prayojan means the indispensable necessity of the soul. The indispensable necessity of the soul is certainly priti, or pure love of Krishna. That is the indispensable necessity of the soul. Everything else is more or less the result of not having priti for the Lord. Even we say the problems of life, you know, many people think the problems of life is I don't get enough sense gratification, it's not sufficiently available. But underlying that is birth, death, disease, and old age. That is a problem of life, the real problems of life, we say. But underlying the problem of birth, death, disease, and old age is the fact that the living entity doesn't have priti for anyone. He doesn't even have priti for himself. He doesn't even know who himself is and actually love himself. He's even envious of himself. This is actually the underlying cause of accepting material bodies birth after birth. Pritir nayavan mayi vasudeve namuchate deha yogena tava. Rishabhdeva mentions this point, that on account of not having priti for the Lord, then one cannot be delivered from accepting material bodies, life after life. So the real cause of our despondency in this world is the fact that we don't have priti. In fact, in the modern world, they consider love to be the search for sex life. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that real misery means one is searching after sex life. This constitutes the principles of real misery. I'm sure many people here have experience. And generally, the search for sex life is called the search for love. Generally, the two are quite related. And one experiences great misery. Even when one is undergoing various miserable conditions on the material platform, when a person thinks that he's in love, then the miseries that he's undergoing become quite mitigated. Or inconsequential, because at least I have love. And then, of course, when that illusion fades away, then all hell breaks loose. He's totally depressed and so on.
So it's being pointed out that the real indispensable necessity of the soul is actually love. But what's going to get us there is a proper process. It's the proper channel will allow us access to that, let's say, the ocean of pure love, unsullied by the bodily various misconceptions of life. So a lot of the discussion goes into understanding the principles, because when one does the practice of Krishna consciousness without understanding of the Sambandha Gyan, that's what you call Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha means, essentially, Niyamagraha means you have the form without the substance. It's dry ritual. And Rupa Goswami mentions in Nectar of Instruction that this is one of the major impediments to the development of devotional service. In fact, he says it becomes a destruction. It destroys real bhakti. That one is applying the various rituals of Krishna consciousness, but he has no proper knowledge. So without the proper knowledge, there cannot be the proper faith that is actually required. There cannot be the proper mentality, the attitude, nor can there be the higher aspiration which fuels the whole thing. You know, in order to have an indomitable desire to resist the pressure created by our psychophysical entanglement, there needs to be the proper aspiration, the higher aspiration, the spiritual aspiration. You know, if someone's aspiration is simply being accepted in the community of devotees alone, then when they perceive that they're not being accepted according to their misconceived notion of what it means to be accepted, then their aspiration will become lost. If their whole aspiration is simply get that name tag, the initiation name tag, for example, that becomes their whole concept of what it means to be a part of a spiritual institution. Then if they don't get that, then they become discouraged. It means that they're losing insight into the higher aspiration of life. The real aspiration of life is supposed to be love of Krishna. That is the actual, the indispensable necessity is not initiation. that is a means to an end in one sense, but it's not the indispensable necessity. The indispensable necessity is Krishna. And that is the aspiration that will actually keep one determined in his application, but that requires proper knowledge to gain, to nourish the proper upper aspiration. You need the proper knowledge. Otherwise, you become easily discouraged. Another form of discouragement seen on the institutional platform is like, let's say, gurus falling down. And generally, it is seen that when that takes place, people just leave, as if there is no scope for attaining the goal of life because of that particular. I mean, it's certainly a problem. We don't want to offend anyone. But that does give some insight to the fact that there was probably not the higher aspiration. Because if there was a higher goal, then despite the dilemma, impediment in the process toward their achievement, it will not create any unnecessary discouragement. Rather, he will refocus his strength toward the actual pursuit. But one needs a proper knowledge. So therefore, education combined with a lot of self-examination is required for there to be the actual pursuit and the actual achievement of the goal of life. So therefore, you see Narada Muni spending so much of time describing some. Of course, he only described one aspect here. But you see most of the time is spent in the principles of Sambandha, because without proper conception, there cannot be the attainment of spiritual life. Apakrita vastu, I've been quoting this verse, apakrita vastu nahe pakritir gochar. That spiritual substance is always beyond the jurisdiction of material conception. And the only way conceptions change primarily is through the process of hearing. Because even if you're chanting without the proper conceptions, then that chanting is at best a semblance of the real thing and does not provide the necessary spiritual strength for moving forward in spiritual life. So if one understands those, taking it very seriously, the process of hearing, what is that verse? I don't remember the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The seriously inquisitive sage, armed with proper knowledge and detachment, realizes the absolute truth according to how he's heard from the authority. And that hearing process is generally a long time. It takes because really hearing means taking instruction. Otherwise, it's hard to hear. It's like when two friends get together to speak about a particular point, it is often discovered that they have a hard time hearing from one another because it's more like a competition on who's got the higher point, the higher realization, the higher insight. You know, we saw yesterday, we were washing pots, and one little simple point was made, and immediately there was a debate that ensued from that little simple point. The point was made by Covey Pete that we tend to be a little bit ritualistic in our application of the morning program, particularly in our resuscitation of the prayers. He pointed out Shisha Shakam. We kind of just like fix in a certain type of ritualistic way of doing it. And that kind of like pressed the emotional button a little bit. And so Bhakta Luke has something to say to that. You know, and then all of a sudden, what blossomed was a very, you know, nice argument. You know, of course, it was a sarcastic argument, right? So no one's yelling or screaming. But it's like that awkwardness that is there that's saying, you know, it was nice. It was funny. And I was sitting in the middle, and I was like, okay, don't get involved. You know, I was wanting to say something too. You know, don't resist it. Resist. It's like a black hole pulling you in. You know, and I was like, resist. Don't do it. Don't do it. So because that's what happens when we're hearing from the platform of equality. It makes it a little bit challenging to hear. Real hearing process usually means someone's getting instructed. Guhyam akyati prichati. You know, confidential inquiry. Srila Prabhupada says that means a superior devotee explains and an inferior devotee hears. That's and hearing means he's accepting the person as a superior and taking instruction. That is usually the process of effective hearing. Not that there can't be discussion amongst equals. There can be in a stage of maturity, but generally when they hear, even when equals hear, they hear in the mood of subordinate. That's what makes it effective. Because it's not this whole competition or enviousness, oh, that was a good point, let me top that. So then, in that way, it makes it effective for assimilating the spiritual principles, which is required for the real application of the process. Otherwise, it's just a ritual. Everyone can experience, I'm sure we all have our experience, without the proper nourishment of transcendental knowledge, then it's just like we're going through the morning program, but there's hardly any taste. Hardly any taste is evolving. And the reason is because of insufficient transcendental insight by the proper ascertaining of the spiritual principles of Sambandhagyan. If you shall look at nectar devotion, when Rupa Goswami discusses what is the adhikar for moving forward in devotional service, the main element he mentions is shraddha. That's the main element that's required for moving progressively forward in devotional service. But he points out that those who have the greatest eligibility for moving forward, the Uttama Adhikaris, the reason they have a profound shraddha and conviction is because they have a lot of knowledge or understanding of the principles of devotional service. And that knowledge has actually nourished their faith and brought them to the platform of Uttama eligibility for moving forward in devotional service. So those who are serious about making progress and transforming the ritualistic aspect of our devotional practices into something that's actually spiritually substantial, then the first stage of its development is called Shravanam Dasha, which means the stage of hearing, which is supposed to be a blissful stage of hearing and applying and figuring out where all the mistakes are and the conceptions and so on like that, and then getting it together. And the more we are nourished transcendentally, our knowledge is nourished transcendentally, the more the ritualistic aspects of our practice are transformed into the actual practice. And then the actual practice very quickly leads to the attainment of the goal of life, pure love of Krishna. And that has actually been described here. So the main elements being described here by Narada Muni is that those who have achieved the goal of life, then their minds, Atmani, is apahata sakala, is completely freed from material contamination. This is the main position of those who have attained the goal of life. It's a very simple point, right? You may not be able to appreciate the beauty of that, but they have no material desires. That is what it means to have attained the goal. Because it is understood that by association with the internal energy of Krishna, their minds are captured by the internal energy. This is described, the internal energy takes over the functions of their mind. That sounds a little bit technical, but actually what it means is that they're under the control of loving feelings for Krishna. It takes over just like when a young boy meets a young girl, then it takes over the functions of their mind and senses, right? I mean, this is a perverted reflection, but the idea can somewhat be understood by that. Even when, Even when doing other activities, their whole mind is captured by that, low-class taste type of thing. It's captured. So similarly, the devotee's mind is always absorbed in Krishna. This is what it means to be a pure devotee. He's always absorbed. His mind is completely captured by loving feelings for Krishna. So although he may appear to be doing so many variety of activities, mind is captured only thinking of one thing. Similarly, in the perverted reflection, Mahaprabhu gave the answer to Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis before they were Goswamis, when they were their beer costs and Sakra League. So when they were wanting to escape the prison of their job or job search, these boys looking for jobs, they wanted to escape the prison. So they were very much disturbed. Mahaprabhu, how can I escape? They were always taking my principles of escaping. So what example Mahaprabhu gave, he said, it's just like a wife who is keeping paramour. She is very attentive to follow the duties that she has for her husband, so the husband won't suspect anything. I was always saying, in Kali Yuga, he'll definitely suspect. Why are you being so attentive? This is not normal, you know. But anyway, that's a joke. But in a proper Vedic context, the wife is generally attentive to the husband's needs and so on. So then she's very, very careful, very attentive, but her mind is captured by her lover. So although she's doing the activities in an external affair, her mind is actually captured by the higher aspiration. Similarly, Raghunath Das Goswami, before he was Das Goswami, when he was just Raghunath Das, he also wanted to escape to join Mahaprabhu's army of love. That word army came out, so I was just working with it. That was an accident. So that time, Mahaprabhu gave a similar instruction in terms of the principle. He told Raghunath Das, don't be a crazy fellow. Be patient. Step by step, you'll be able to come out of the prison of material life and get the attainment of Krishna's lotus feet. Then he gives a very important principle. He says, antare kara nishta bahye loka vyavahar. In your heart, antare, internally, you should always keep your firm faith in the higher aspiration. But externally, you should act like an ordinary person so that no one shall suspect you. Because at the time, Raghunath Das Goswami was always trying to escape. So that time, his father made nice arrangement for there to always be 11 people surrounding him. So there was no question of escaping. So he had to work on that particular platform. It's a social platform. Just so that no one was... But in your heart, you always keep your focus on the higher aspiration. So completely absorbed in attaining the lotus feet of Krishna. Or in their case, in the point I'm trying to bring out, having attained the lotus feet of Krishna. Completely absorbed in Krishna only, in the lotus feet of Krishna. And although doing so many other activities externally, absorbed in one point. So therefore, it's hard to make out who is pure devotee. And as a result of not being captured by so many material desires, then it's mentioned here, Adita Bhava. Their Aviratam Adita Bhava. Their loving feelings are constantly expanding for Krishna. Just like we discover that our feelings don't expand for Krishna. They generally tend to go down the opposite direction, and we sometimes have this experience. There's not an why? Because material desires are capturing, has captured our resolve for devotional service. Those who don't have a fire, it is mentioned by Rupa Goswami that the Parabdha Karma means the manifestation of our various fruitive activities that we're experiencing now. That includes various types of polluted psychologies that we all have. He mentions that can be destroyed by devotional service. But he mentions that the quality of devotional service has to be like a blazing fire. You know, not like lightweight work, but like a blazing fire. And the blazing fire of devotional service can burn up the aparabdha and the parabdha karma, which includes the perverted psychologies that we're suffering with. So when one's devotional service lacks that intensity, Tibhrena Bhakti Yogena, then what is discovered is that the material desires, not only do they initially act like an anchor, just keeping one from being progressive, but then the anchor becomes like larger, and it starts to bring the boat down, 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 and becomes, you know, underneath the water, underneath the surface. When one can actually cut off the anchors by the blazing application of devotional service, then he notices that his loving feelings expand for Krishna, for the service of Krishna. It becomes more and more expanded. And the particular element Srila Prabhupada brings out in the purport describing the mentality of such devotees is that they are become completely dependent on Krishna. He quotes Sri Shastakam 5 and also Narottam Das Thakur's song. And if you shall see that the element being brought out by Srila Prabhupada is the utter dependence on the devotee. Ayi nanda tanujan kinkaram, I am now your servant. Patitam mam vishame bhavambudo, but I have fallen into this ocean of material existence. And therefore I'm asking you to take me by your mercy and keep me as a drop of a speck of dust at your lotus feet. This is giving an expression to a feeling of complete dependence upon the Lord. I have no other shelter but you. Narottam Das Thakur's prayer is very similar. He's praying to Srimati Radharani and Krishna, now both of you please be merciful upon me. Don't kick me away because I have no shelter other than you. So in both verses, it's giving expression to the idea that I'm completely dependent. Vasudeva, what is that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Bahu nam jamananante ganavama prapadyante vasu sanravamiti samahamasudhubha. The devotees who are properly, who are ganavan, you have like Bhagavan, means one who is full of bhagas. And then we have Agavan, one who is full of sins. Agavan, this is mentioned by one verse there. And you have Ganavan, Shradavan, just like Nitai, that song comes. For those who have Shraddha, they can purchase the holy name. So you have also, you have, which word I would say? Ganavan, Mahaprabhupada. Ganavan means one who is full of Gan, real Gan, not the dry stuff that makes you sleep, but the devotional knowledge that nourishes bhakti to Krishna. And then what happens to their consciousness? Vasudeva sarvam iti. Krishna is everything for me. And that doesn't mean Krishna is everywhere for me, but Krishna is everything to me. And without Krishna, how can I live? Mahaprabhu was giving expression to this sentiment when he says, I have no love for Krishna. And the body said, you are always crying for Krishna. He said, I'm simply to put on a show because I want to be, you know, Mahabhagavata, considered Mahabhagavata by everyone. You know, if I'm just considered ordinary soul, who will appreciate me properly? So I'm crying, but I don't have even a scent of love. He makes a prayer like this. But another verse is there, Rupa Goswami saying, expressing that he has no spiritual qualification, but the hope to attain Krishna is breaking his heart every day. So in this way, it's an expression of dependence on the Supreme Lord. Whereas in the perverted reflection, we experience no such dependency on the Supreme Lord. As a result, there's always the tendency for making our own arrangements for how to do everything in our life. We try to make our own arrangements for understanding the philosophy. We try to make our own arrangements for the pursuit of Krishna. Everything is, there is no dependency. And it's all a doership program. As soon as something shall be deviated from our program of doership, immediately we become totally frustrated and discouraged about pursuing devotional service. Oh, I'm not God. I can't tolerate this anymore. And that's like the whole attitude. No sense of dependency. You know, sometimes we have these like good days, maybe good hours of devotional practice. And then all of a sudden an anartha like pops up. It's like a real heavy anartha. And then we say, what is the use of the whole affair? You know, we know, and rather than like thinking maybe I should take greater, deeper shelter of Krishna because the whole thing was actually an artificial show, we rather think give up the whole thing. As a result, there is no experience of happiness in Krishna consciousness. Happiness is experienced on proportionate degree of taking shelter. Just like Prabhupada's example is the plane, maybe the space shuttle flying high in the universe, high in the sky, but they cannot stay there. Finally, it needs some shelter. Otherwise, you cannot be happy just floating around. Maybe in the beginning, it's kind of cool. You know, floating around in space and so on. But finally, you need some shelter. You need some grounding, spiritual grounding. So similarly, only when one feels shelter, just like it is mentioned that generally women need shelter. But it's not that only the women need shelter. You know, we need shelter too, the men, because we're also Prakriti. We're also women, and, you know, in a kind of technical speech. We're also Prakriti, so everyone needs shelter. You know, therefore, you know, don't mind, this is kind of like a little maybe brahmachari point, but the whole concept of another Prakriti giving shelter to another Prakriti is foolishness. Because it's not possible. Two Prakritis coming together and trying to give one another shelter. It doesn't make any sense. Only a Purusha can give shelter. And there's only one Purusha. That's Krishna. So then the whole program of the material world is just sheer illusion, thinking I'm going to give shelter. And as a result of thinking like that, no one feels shelter in the material world. They feel, and as a result of not feeling shelter, the tendency to act independence becomes more powerful. You only give up the tendency for independent life when you feel shelter. Like everything is here, no need to act independently. So until that happens, by the attainment of real Krishna consciousness, then one goes on suffering material desires. Because independent desire, the desire for independence becomes a platform for mental concoction, which becomes a platform for so many material desires coming up. This is described also, nectar devotion. So then the beautiful quality about pure love of Krishna is not only does the devotee have these feelings of dependence on Krishna, but Krishna also has these feelings of dependency on the devotee. As mentioned there, Nija Jana Vasha, he becomes controlled by his devotee's love. It is in fact mentioned that the love of the devotee makes Krishna dance in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna sits still for a reason. Where is the love? No love. And when one has love, then it causes Krishna to dance. Dance on our tongue as the holy name of Krishna, etc. He becomes captured by his devotee's love. So just as a devotee is completely dependent on Krishna, Krishna also feels himself completely dependent on his devotee. One nice verse is there in the ninth canto when Devrasmuni goes to Narayana, you know, with the Sudarshan chakra hot on his tail. And he's like, you know, this is your chakra. Can you do something about this? And Lord Narayana says, nah. Of course, in more poetic language. Yeah. This is the let's say, the hip-hop version to keep everyone awake. he says, I cannot do anything about it. There's a reason. He says, because I'm not independent. That's, you know, so don't fault me for that. I can't do anything about the chakra because I'm not actually independent. I'm dependent upon my devotee. And in fact, I'm so dependent upon my devotee that those who are dear to my devotee, I feel dependent on them too. This is the hope for those who are practicing devotees. If you can be a servant of a servant, of one who is really loving Krishna, then Krishna feels himself obliged to such a devotee, also such a even neophyte devotee. Because Krishna tries to serve his pure devotees, but they never agree to accept anything from Krishna. This is the dilemma of Krishna. He wants to do some service for them, but the devotee never will agree. If Krishna tries to serve us, we say, yes, yes, I've been praying so long and so many years, finally. But those who have pure love for Krishna, Krishna cannot do anything for them. They would never agree to accept any service from Krishna. So when another devotee serves that devotee, Krishna feels obliged to that. Oh, I was wanting to do that thing, but the devotee would not accept it from me. But now you're doing the thing that I wanted to do, and therefore I'm feeling obliged to you. This is a secret to success in spiritual life. If one can take up such a mentality towards his devotee, then very easily even that devotee can capture Krishna, because Krishna has told that thing to Devrasamuni. And this way, the position of devotional service is glorified to kind of impel our aspiration toward Krishna. It is not that discussion of the goal of life should not be had, because although the principles of pure love are very subtle and therefore very hard to understand for those who are still fettered by anarthas, however, it is important to hear about the attainment of the goal of life, the nature of the exchange between Krishna and the soul when it's on the platform of pure love, to give inspiration to our practice. Otherwise, the whole inspiration becomes just getting rid of our anarthas. That's okay. That's not a very high aspiration. You know, in order to nourish a higher tendency in the soul, then these discussions are also had, although generally in a very succinct way in the scriptures. But it is had to nourish the concept for something higher and wonderful. So then that's my discussion. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Create different illusions. And you were also mentioning that the adhikar for advancement in devotional service is faith. And in my personal experience, sometimes I feel that the various illusions created by my prarabdha karma interfere with my faith and don't allow me to place proper faith. So how do we overcome this problem? Because we're trying to place faith, but there's so many illusions created by the mind that we're not able to...
Yeah, well, so my point was that Rupa Goswami says, by the nourishment of knowledge, one's faith becomes mature or expanded. So what happens is, on the material platform, we are strongly identifying with the material body and mind, and therefore we're allowing the, how you say, the disturbances in the mind to block the frequency. What is it? I'm trying to use like an image here, and I can't think of it. When sound goes throughout the ether, it needs a proper signal and a proper receptor. Is that the proper language to use? Like that signal. So then the signal has to be there, and the receptor has to also be there. Then when the sound travels through the ether, it's received by the receptor. So when one is too strongly identifying with the body and mind, that blocks the receptivity. So the signals are coming, but there's no receptivity because of strong identification with the body and mind. So therefore, and that will, of course, create disturbances in the faith because you're identifying with the mind, and the nature of the mind that's covered by the covering Shakti of Maya is to create doubts. You know, that's called the Prabhupada calls it the spell of diversion, potency. You know, this doubt, that doubt, this doubt, that doubt, that, and in that way destroy the spiritual life. So then there is a necessity to decrease the bodily conception, which begins with decreasing the bodily activity. So you'll discover that a lot of the principles of sadhana bhakti restrict sense gratification in a kind of natural way, because that will help nourish a more spiritual concept of life. That means less identification with the body and mind, which means increasing the receptivity to the signals. And then when there's receptivity of the signals, that means divya gyan, transcendental knowledge, then there's nourishment of faith. The creeper, the bhakti lata, which is told to be shraddha, was able to penetrate the brahmanda. There's description in Rupa Goswami's teachings about the bhakti lata creeper. You know, first thing is it penetrates the brahmanda, the material universe, and then the viraja river between the material and spiritual world. Then it enters the brahma loka, and then the vaikuntha lokas, and then all the way up to Krishna. So that means the shraddha, the pure devotional faith, the pure devotional desire based on that faith has to be able to penetrate all these things. So that happens, you know. Then just to see that we have to increase our receptivity. So that's just the simple application of the principles. Otherwise, to the degree we're identifying with the body and mind, to that degree, yeah, there's going to be challenges to our faith. Kanishtha Adhikar. You know, Kanishtha Adhikar means that at any moment there could be fall down because it's pliable faith. As soon as there's a situation, then it's finished. Not thoroughly finished, but maybe this life or maybe for a couple of years or...
That comes is that, so you're recently sharing that verse in the sixth canto that says that not by following austerities and penances and all these things can one be purified, but a very sinful person can be purified by following a great soul. So you're saying that by reducing our bodily activities, it'll improve our receptivity to Divya Gyan. But my doubt was the Prabhupada Karma is actually, but so this verse is actually saying that it's not the austerities and the penances that are going to help you, it's the service to a great soul. And my doubt comes that the Prabhupada Karma blocks you from placing faith in great souls. So you're not able to actually do the process that's going to help you.
See, the
purified
faith, the so-called faith of fledgling devotees of devotional service is hardly substantial. The so-called faith that they so-called have in their, you know, spiritual personalities is very pliable. All it takes is a little bit of a chastisement or a little bit something that's not the expectation of what a loving relationship is supposed to be to just smash the faith of the fledgling devotee of devotional service. So we can hardly say it's, you know, faith proper. It's a semblance of faith. But that semblance of faith gets the thing going. So then what happens is that with the semblance of faith, you know, okay, he's nice to me, he like that, you know, and that keeps you a little bit attracted and attached. But then what happens? He says something, you want to follow it. But what is he saying? He's saying, do the process of sadhana bhakti. And then what's happening? You're following that and you're decreasing your association with material sense gratification. And you're coming up and then you're becoming more receptive to the actual messages. And your faith is getting strengthened and nourished like that. So it's still the same. It is not, when that verse says it is not by austerity, it's not by this. It means it's not by that alone. It doesn't mean it's not like, oh, I can do sense enjoyment, because it's not by controlling senses you're attaining Krishna. It just means it's not by sense control alone. It's not by celibacy alone or austerity alone. You you know, all these things become actually meaningful in relationship to a great soul. That's the verse that you're mentioning. So, but in order to bring the faith to a proper, mature faith, nishtha, which is the real, you know, you can say the beginning of the real form of faith, then there is necessity for all those various applications, which you will be doing under the instruction of some great soul. You will be doing all those things. And what will be happening is the actual faith will be nourished. Like now our faith is so pliable, as soon as there's some duality, everything's finished. But then you're following the process, then the same dualities come up and you're solid. You know, so that means it's actually getting nourished. I like that. So it creates a disturbance in faith only because the faith is not actually the proper one yet. Like that. He wanted to say something that.
You mentioned the necessity to understand Sambandha Gyan fully and how the emphasis was on that aspect. Could you perhaps briefly describe or spend a little time explaining intricacies of Sambandha Gyan? Like,
of course not. Of course not. That's a huge discussion.
I know, I figured it's a big point, but you know, perhaps you could shed some light on
some of the intricacies. Mahaprabhu's teachings, Bhaktivinoda Thakur organized for us and called it the Dashamula Tattva. Generally, in Mahaprabhu's times, no one thought of it as that. Everyone knew those teachings, but they didn't think of it as Dashamula Tattva. Just like now, we read Prabhupada's books, and Prabhupada's books also go through those principles, but you don't think that if I were actually, do you know the Dashamula Tattva? Everyone would probably say no. But actually, when you hear the principles of Dashamula, you say, oh yeah, this is Prabhupada's teachings. So then, Dashamula Tattva has three divisions, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojan, and Sambandha Gyan has seven divisions to it. Krishna is the source of everything, even Brahman and Paramatma. Krishna is the source of all the Shaktis, and Krishna is the source of all rasas, or the reservoir of all rasas. So three things related to Krishna. Then the next three principles is jiva, both liberated and conditioned. Then the jiva and maya, and the jiva and the liberated platform. Those are the next three principles. So three principles dealing with Krishna, three principles dealing with jiva, and also maya. This is the situation of the Maya Shakti. Then the last principle, Sambandha Gyan, the seventh principle is Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. So these are the seven principles of Sambandha Gyan. And then that leads to the Abhideya, which is Shuddha Bhakti, and that leads to the Prayojana, which is pure love of God. This is, and that's nine principles. The tenth principle is that the basis of all these things is Shastra, received through Guru Parampara. So this is called the Dashamula Tattva. Like that. So there are no seven principles. And all you're hearing is the same thing from different angles of vision. Same points.
I've heard of this Dashamula Tattva, but where can it be found? Is it explained in more detail?
Oh, so many books are there. You can be found in Srila Prabhupada's books. I guess you would have to discuss with a devotee to find out which one is. It's not very difficult once you know what the principle is. I just told seven principles, right? So now Narada Muni's teachings we just discussed was what? It was the seventh principle, right? Achintya Beda Beda Tattva. So we were just discussing one principle of the Dashamula Tattva. But there are books there also, you know, one book called Dashamula Tattva by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In Jaiva Dharma, there's a whole section dedicated to Dashamula Tattva, like that. And you probably can ask someone if it's feasible. But Srila Prabhupada's books is the only discussion of that. Only. Yeah, you want to say something?
Prabhu, it's a follow-up question from Himanshu Prabhu. Himanshu Prabhu told that, and you gave the answer that we are in the dualities, and the small dualities come in the life, we get shackled. And at the same time in the lecture, dualities, you know, we are in the dualities, something, when the dualities come, we get disturbed and agitated. And at the same time in the lecture, you told that it's an unearthed nivritti stage, and the stage is not good stage because we have to try something beyond that stage. But it's quite confusing for me because it seems that we are not try to overcome that stage at all. So how do you relate this thing? When a duality has come, it's an unearthed nivritti, right? We can compare this thing as an unearthed nivritti stage. Are you getting me?
No, not really. Yeah, you want to give expression to what he's saying.
He's asking. I think if I understand the question, he's saying in regards to Himanshu's question that when us neophytes of little faith, not faith proper, just experience these travails of the dualities in so many various circumstances, and it dissuades us from continuing in the process of developing more faith through devotional activities. How can we practically you know, what's some tricks or tips to overcome these dualities and stay with the process, if I understood correctly.
The lecture you're telling that it's a, we don't have to stick to the unearthed nivritti stage. So my question, first question is overcoming duality is an unearthed nivritti stage?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you told that our aspiration should be higher than anant nivritti. But it's pretty confusing though, because we are always trying...
For purification.
Every day we are trying, for, it's a new day, it's a challenge for us to overcome yeah. this thing. So how, what is...
Yeah, it means that, so the weight of our anartas is so intense that we can see hardly beyond that point.
Yes.
You know, like that. Yeah, you know, it's like, therefore they say the, by the, what is that verse? Mukam kuroti vachalam pangu lagayate ginam. Yakripata Mahamandisha Guru. This verse comes that by the mercy of Guru, even a lame man can cross over a mountain. You know, as we mentioned, usually our anartas are filled like that sometimes, you know, a mountain without a peak. And then you feel thoroughly discouraged. How can I, you're saying we need to hear higher, but I can't, this mountain doesn't even have a peak. My anartas are so heavy, or, you know, the Kaliyuga, there's an ocean of faults. So the idea of the expression of an ocean of faults is that let's not even discuss it because it's an ocean. You know, it's unlimitedly deep, practically speaking, how entrenched we are. Yeah, so that can be discouraging. And then our whole absorption may get on to the point of just trying for purification and purification and purification without maybe cultivating a higher aspiration. Therefore, what I like to say is both points are important because sometimes it does happen. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to put a lot of emphasis on this point, that people can also, it can happen, someone's so much focused on the higher goals of Krishna consciousness that they don't realize the current situation that and the current work that needs to be done. And similarly, someone can be so focused on the current work that needs to be done that they have no higher aspiration in devotional world that are dangerous in terms of the actual achievement of spiritual life. Anyway, in terms of the dilemma that you're saying that most of us may have to deal with, it is mentioned that, in short, that the Sangha of devotees is what creates a sense of higher, like an authentic higher aspiration, at the same time engendering a sort of self-honesty about how to get there. You know, I can see the goal of life, but I can also see where I'm at and how to move step by step there. There is necessity for a Sangha of devotees. Tandara charana sevi bhakta sanivas. We should render service to the devotees of Krishna. Prabhupada usually says the acharyas, bhakta sanivas, and you should live in a society of devotees. Prabhupada says to live in a society of devotees means to associate with the process of shravanam and kirtanam. And I often like to mention a point, usually, although Bhagavatam class is nice, for the, you know, a general purpose of discussing and keeping us kind of regulated in some type of discussion in Krishna consciousness. Generally, in order to make hearing really effective, there's two things that's usually required. A devotee who's a real devotee, like fixed on Krishna consciousness, and then the proper faith in such a devotee. And that too, usually it requires a confidential environment for a more profound level of discussion. Because there are a lot of things that can't be discussed in the open arena. Like, for example, anartas that we might be struggling with. You're not going to say, well, Prabhu, you know, I'm struggling with some lust and here it is, you know, in an open environment, you know, presumably, unless you're like, you know, gone mad or something. Then you're not going to discuss so many things. Or it might be like some really heavy doubt. Like, suppose you have a doubt about the form of Krishna. You know, you've been practicing for so many years. You might feel embarrassed to say, you know, I don't believe that God has a form. And then all the devotees would, you know, throw them those evil glances on you and you feel totally like cut down and like, I shouldn't have said anything. And you might feel uncomfortable. So you might want to discuss that, but this won't be like the environment for that type of discussion. At least you might not feel comfortable in doing so. So usually we need Shravanam Kirtan in our life. Everyone needs a little Shravanam Kirtan in their life, you know. And Shravanam Kirtan, you know, the best place for Shravanam Kirtan, you could say it's an opinion, but it's a personal experience, and I think a lot of us can account for it, is that a confidential environment is usually required. Therefore, you will discover that a lot of the spiritual teachings did take place in confidential environments. Not all. You have a few exceptional examples, like Nara preaching to the Haryashvas, Shavalashvas. You can say Rishabh Dev teaching to his 100 sons, but that's still confidential because they're all his sons. So you see that, but otherwise most of the examples are what? Kapila to Devahuti, Maitreya to Vidura. Even Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj was in an open arena, but Prabhupada says in the second canto that it was actually a discussion just between them. Prabhupada said, he said others were just getting the benefit. They just happened to be hanging out, you know. But actually the discussion was quite very much between them. So anyway, what are some other? Mahaprabhu to Rupa Goswami, Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami, Mahaprabhu to Ramananda Roy. And so you see a lot of the examples, the environment is quite confidential. And that allows for a kind of freedom of expression, not only of the philosophy, but in terms of revelation of the heart also. So this is my personal experience. I just, you know, experienced that I was able to most properly either give expression or express my heart when the environment was properly confidential. And that allowed for a more, let's say, profound experience of the Shravanam Kirtan process. So generally we need that type of association to, you know, get a higher aspiration. Faith is created in association with devotees who have such things, but also to give the necessary honesty that would be required for properly pursuing the goal progressively without getting thoroughly discouraged like that. That's my answer. I don't know how much that shall be appreciated, but okay, so you know, it's kind of 8:45, is it? Oh. And I only the class, I started at 8 o'clock. That's when, because the Dharmadarashakam went over into 8:50, you know, and then the transfer of the Vyasa sign and all these things. By the time I finished my very short Jayarada Madhava, you know, 2 minutes long, and I finished the purport, it was 8 o'clock. It was a little past 8. So it was 8:45. I hope no one will find too much fault with me, you know. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.